Welcome to episode 129 of Practical Defense, Kane Defense. Welcome to the Practical Defense Podcast, where you'll learn practical approaches to staying safe in our increasingly dangerous urban environments. I'm your host, Alex Addix. This week, our subject is going to be cane defense, and this is going to touch upon defense for the elderly and possibly the physically disabled. However, the focus is going to be an evaluation of the cane as a defensive tool. I know that most folks were expecting an interview in this episode with Bill Herndon, but unfortunately, Bill had more pressing personal matters he needed to take care of, so we postponed the interview. We'll schedule it for another time that is better for him, and hopefully not in the too distant future. So why the cane? Well, I've received multiple emails and personal messages asking about my impression of the cane as a self-defense tool. I've never personally trained with the cane as a defensive tool, but I have seen demonstrations and worked with people who have been trained in its use, and they showed me a few things. A few months ago, I also went out and purchased a couple of training DVDs for evaluation purposes because of all the interest. So why now? Well, this has been on my list of subjects to cover for some time, and I figured I should finally get to it. Most recently, there were a couple things that brought it to my attention. First was that the Cane Master Group made national news with their program for the elderly. Second was an article in the Armed American Report that came out just last week. So, with these two high-profile incidents, I figured now would be as good a time as any to cover the subject. And I might head off another series of emails. And finally, we may not have Bill Herndon this week, but we do have our good friend Tony Brown, and he helps us out with a tip on garage security.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony Brown, host of Firearms Cafe and the Armed Ape Podcast. On today's segment, I'll talk a little bit about garage safety. I'll tell a story that happened to a neighbor of mine a few months ago. As he was leaving to run some errands, he had backed out into the street and had taken off to leave the neighborhood. As he was driving away, his garage door was closing. Unbeknownst to him, however, one of his kids' bikes had shifted a little bit as the door was going to close, and the front of the tire stuck out just enough to trip the closing sensor. And this made the garage door go all the way back up, so it was completely wide open. For those of you that don't know, all garage door openers, at least the modern ones I should say, have a closing sensor. And this is designed so that if a child or a family pet were underneath the door and the door met a certain amount of resistance, it goes back up. And this will prevent any injury from the garage door to the child or the pet. Well, I went next door and spoke with his wife. We got the problem resolved and the door was shut. But this taught me a lesson. It was a real learning opportunity for me. As most of us know, a lot of crime and a lot of theft is not necessarily pre-planned out. A lot of it are what I would call thefts of opportunity. That open garage door presents a very good opportunity for somebody to help themselves to whatever's in the garage. Also, most of us, unfortunately, do not lock what I would call the entry door from the garage into the house. Especially during the day, we tend to leave it open so that we can come in and out and it's not a big pain. So by the garage door being open, you've also removed a barrier to a would-be thief to be able to enter the home. In closing, when you're leaving the home, just make sure that your garage door closes all the way, and you'll save yourself some headaches and some grief in the future. That's going to do it for today. Stay informed and stay safe. I'll talk to you next time.
Welcome back, and thanks, Tony. The sensor that I have on my garage door is an infrared beam. If anything crosses the beam, the door won't close. However, just like the pressure plate at the bottom of the door, it will close until the last 6 inches and then open again. You'd think that with a beam it just wouldn't move, or just move a bit. But no, it nearly goes all the way down to the bottom and then back up again. Thanks for the great tip. Okay, so let's move on to the cane. First, I'm going to talk a little bit about the cane itself as a defensive weapon, separate from everything else. Then I'm going to talk about some of the training that I've been exposed to, including 3 DVDs that I purchased and reviewed. And finally, I'm going to give my impression of the practicality of using the cane in the real world. When you distill the cane down to its most basic element, it is essentially a stick. This is aside from the application as a crutch. If you have a stick, you have a club. And canes are designed to support weight, so now this club is dense and strong. And finally, the cane needs to be roughly the length of your leg, so now it's around 3 feet or 1 meter long. So in practical terms, you're carrying a 3-foot club made of dense material. That is a nice defensive tool. So, when properly employed, the cane is a formidable defensive weapon. It's a middle distance between a full staff and the sticks used by scrimmadors, and it has lots of functions. For instance, it can be used to block, to parry, to strike, to thrust, to trip, and to contain. The downside is that you need some space to use it to its full ability. In super close quarters, you can thrust with it, which can be devastating, and perhaps some containment, some tripping, or blocking. It will be severely limited in a home hallway, a bedroom, or an office environment. It's best employed in open spaces like a parking lot. The crook or handle of the cane adds functions that you would not get from a normally straight stick. It's used to trip, contain, and choke. If you had training in the Tonfa or the PR-24 police baton, the moves will look very familiar. The cane is part of the Hapkido tradition, which longtime listeners of the show know that I spent 4 years training in. My grandmaster Bong Su Han did not teach any weapons until after black belt, which I never achieved in Hapkido, so I never learned the techniques from him. However, I did see him and some of the higher ranks training in the cane, and it was amazing to watch. Grandmaster Han carried a cane with him when he went for his afternoon walks. This gray-haired, little old, and an unimpressive Korean man carrying his cane was probably the most dangerous person on the street. I've seen the cane used in 2 distinct methods. One is what I will call the European gentleman's cane, and these are usually straight sticks with a knob at the end that goes into your palm. These were popular in the 18th and 19th centuries and were more often a fashion statement than a crutch. Most of the techniques for this type of cane looked more like fencing than stick fighting, and probably because of its European roots. The techniques I've seen that employ the cane with a crook have more of an Asian feel to them. If you train with a cane, one of the features you must remember to take advantage of is the leverage that it offers. It is a 3-foot or 1 meter stick. If you lock that puppy in a joint at one end while you hold the other, it does not take much force at all to destroy the joint or obtain pain compliance. You also need to keep that in mind for your training partner. You can hurt each other quite easily, so always use caution and tap out early. Now, with any style or weapon, there are cane techniques that are fancy and look beautiful, and others that are direct and practical. So, as always, the application of the tool, be it your hands, a firearm, knife, or stick, it's up to the practitioner rather than the tool specifically. So now let's move on to the DVDs that I reviewed. Now, I bought 3 of them. One was The Cane by Grandmaster Pellegrini from his Combat Hapkido series. The other one is The Basic Foundation of the Cane from Cane Masters, and Cane for Self-Defense by Master Gordon Oster. I have the utmost respect for Grandmaster Pellegrini, and I love Hapkido as a martial art. Unfortunately, this DVD falls short of my expectations. It consists mostly of Grandmaster Pellegrini demonstrating techniques in silence. There's very little in the way of voiceover narration and almost no instruction. The upside is that Grandmaster Pellegrini demonstrates each technique slowly so that every move is visible. If you pay close attention and can learn from watching, you'll be able to pick up the moves. Another good aspect is that the techniques are also very simple and easy to understand. There's not much fluff and flair, and everything is kept at a practical level. Now, the big players in cane techniques is Cane Masters. They have done an incredible job of bringing awareness of the cane as a self-defense tool, especially in terms of the disabled and the elderly. That said, they have the worst DVD of the 3 that I purchased. The video quality is like a bad VHS tape. The sound is gritty. I bought the first of the series, The Foundation, but all of the instruction is solo. It's just the instructor standing in front of a screen talking to the camera. The upside is that the instruction is simple and easy to understand. However, the moves and blocks are not demonstrated on an opponent. They are done just in the air from a single direction, facing the camera. And one of the odd things is that one of the instructors is a 12 or 14-year-old boy, which is cute, but just kind of struck me as odd. Far above all the others is The Cane for Self-Defense by Master Gordon Auster. This DVD is the most complete, it has the best video and audio quality, it has great angles, including a three-quarter view from above sometimes, and the instruction is detailed. This DVD covers the cane as a martial art, so it goes beyond the practical applications and into the art of the martial art as well. I'll include links to all the DVDs in the show notes. Now let's switch to the practical implications and applications of the cane. One of the big selling points of the cane that all these DVDs and marketing pieces claim is that the cane is perfectly legal to carry anywhere. One of the DVDs even mentions taking a cane on a plane. My response is, sure, it might be legal, but that doesn't mean you won't have to justify carrying it before or after you use it in self-defense. Here's a scenario. Three men have just attacked you and you defended yourself with a cane and you beat the holy hell out of them. As a prosecutor, or some other attorney representing one of your attackers you put in the hospital, I would look at the weapon used in the so-called defense. Sure, it might be legal to carry. However, that doesn't mean that you can't go to jail or pay civil damages for using it. The first question I would ask is, what is a fully able-bodied person carrying a cane for in the first place? That question would be followed with, a person in good physical condition has no need for a crutch. So why is this person carrying it? Was it prescribed by a physician or recommended by a physical therapist? No? Well, that's interesting. Oh, and so the person is also a martial artist and trained in its use as a weapon. So therefore, it was never truly a cane in the first place. It was actually a concealed weapon all along. So, yes, a cane might be perfectly legal to carry, but that doesn't mean you won't have to justify it in court if you're forced to defend yourself. So let's assume that you have a physical need to use a cane. Can it still be used effectively in a self-defense situation? This is where it gets complicated. The best way I can sum it up is that the less you need it, the more effective it is. I'll explain. The cane is first and foremost a crutch. It's a walking and support aid for people with mobility difficulties. If you have only minor issues with mobility, then you can implement the cane as a defensive tool nearly to its fullest capability. However, if you rely on the cane for support, taking that support away and using it as a defensive weapon is risky. If you need a cane for support and you take that support away and start flailing and enter into hand-to-hand combat, you're at greater risk of falling down. Now again, going to the ground in a criminal encounter is a bad idea, and if you already have a hard time getting back up, it's even more of a bad idea. The target market for much of cane use is for an aging population, you know, the baby boomers specifically and folks even older than that. I can see teaching cane to someone who is athletic or was athletic. However, teaching grandma to use her cane as a weapon against a 20-year-old thug when she's never had any combative experience in the past is just not really going to work. You can remind an older person of what they used to know physically, but not for someone who has no frame of reference. I'll use my mother, my father, and myself as examples here. We'll start with my mother. My mother has little physical ability, was never an athlete, and has a poor sense of balance. She also has severe arthritis in her hands. Her mobility is deteriorating, and just last weekend we were talking about getting her some sort of stability device. I brought up the cane because I was thinking about it in preparation for this episode. She would be a bad candidate for the cane as a defensive tool. She would have a hard time gripping it due to her arthritis, she has no athletic skill left, and her sense of balance is really bad. If she tried to swing a cane at somebody, she would probably fall down before making any contact. She's already fallen once and broken her shoulder. If she falls again, she could break a hip, her arms, or her shoulder again. My mother is probably a better candidate for a walker, and a horrible candidate for a cane as a self-defense weapon. Now let's switch to my father. My father is still in good shape for his age of 81. As you might recall from previous episodes, we go to judo class together once a week. My father was always a fantastic athlete, and his sport was gymnastics. I have pictures of him doing handstands on the railings above the Grand Canyon of the Pacific, which is in Hawaii, and on the peak of the Great Pyramid of Egypt, because back in the old days, they let you climb up it. 2 weeks ago in judo class, at 81 years old, he did a headstand with a little help. My father has an excellent sense of balance and is a natural athlete. His only combative training was in the Marines, and that was back in 1945. However, my father could probably pick up the cane as a defensive weapon if he wanted to, and might be able to use it with some effectiveness. Now let's evaluate me. I am really interested in the cane as I fully expect to need one in the next 10 to 20 years. My left knee is damaged and nothing short of some radical surgery will fix it. I'm still waiting for something effective to be developed. I've had problems with my knee since it was kicked out during a sparring match when I was 14. It was never quite right after that. My orthopedist recommended swimming to rehabilitate my knee, which was what got me on the swim team as a teenager. Then, 10 years later, when I was 24, I lost a ligament in the same knee. I was doing the splits, and I was just about an inch off the ground when my foot slipped. I'd spent about 40 minutes before class warming up and practicing, so I was sweaty. When my foot slipped out, my knee separated and hit the ground sideways. The popping noise it made was loud enough to be heard by the entire class. I was done for years, and it was one of the reasons I stopped practicing for nearly a decade. Today, I practice with a steel knee brace, and I still can't do some of the Kenpo moves very well. I have to be extremely careful in twist dances and when I'm doing any spinning kick. When I practice techniques with a partner, I always have to remind them of my bad knee. You know, just this weekend, I had to stop after an hour of class because I felt something pop under my kneecap. I came home and iced it off and on for the rest of the day. What keeps my knee together when I practice are deliberate moves, never forgetting that it's bad, muscle, and just willpower. When I lose any of those factors, I usually end up in pain and ice packs. So it's quite possible I would need to use a cane to help walk later in life. I would be an excellent candidate for the cane as a defensive tool. I have prior combative experience, I'm athletic, I have a great sense of balance, and at least initially, my knee would not be that severe. The last point I want to make is that the elderly are seen as targets by criminals. Thugs prey upon them because they are, for the most part, easy prey. What they are not expecting is any sort of resistance. If grandma suddenly turns on a thug and starts screaming and poking at him with her cane, he might be shocked into leaving her alone. It's risky, but it might work. Here's a real-world example of that. I had some elderly neighbors some years ago, and some punk tried to rob them in a grocery store parking lot. The husband just turned to the guy, and without saying a word, punched him straight in the jaw and knocked him on his ass. The punk was so surprised, he just got up and ran away. They were both in their mid-70s at the time. If it hadn't scared the thug away and instead elicited a violent reaction, it could have been really bad. But fortunately, in their case, it didn't, and it made for a great story. And so there you have it. The cane can be an extremely effective defensive weapon under the right conditions by the right person. And you're listening to a potential cane user.
"80% of all homicides are gang and drug trafficking related, according to the Bureau of Justice Statistics. That means at least 80% of all firearm homicides are caused by gangs in the drug trade. Not you, not your neighbor, despite what Dianne Feinstein might think. On average, gang members arrested for murder are often suspects in two other homicides. These two items together show that 80% of gun homicides could be stopped by incarcerating as few as 3,000 well-known repeat violent offenders. That's who Feinstein should be working against, not you. Arm yourself with facts to strip the gun control industry bare. Visit gunfacts.info and get your free copy of Gun Facts. Called Indispensable by Cam Edwards of NRA News, Gun Facts is your rapid reference guide to debunking gun control myths and shaming politicians into obedience. www.gunfacts.info.
Gun Rights Radio Network has the best pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun rights podcast available on the net. The podcasts are absolutely free when subscribing using iTunes or Zune Marketplace. Or if you want, you can just listen from the website. Make sure you visit gunrightsradio.com to subscribe. Podcasting freedom, one episode at a time.
So, in summary, we have: when properly employed, the cane is a formidable defensive weapon. What separates a cane from just a stick is the crook, and the crook can be used to trip, to contain, and to choke. The cane may be legal to carry anywhere, but you still might have to justify carrying one and using one. The less you need a cane, the better it will be as a defensive tool. The converse also applies. The more you need it, the less useful it'll be. You can remind an older person of what they used to know physically, but teaching combatives to an elderly person who has no frame of reference will most likely not work very well. As always, don't forget that we have a 20% discount on subscriptions to Taekwondo Times magazine. Just enter our exclusive promo code of PRACDEF01 at checkout. The subscription to the print edition includes digital copies as well. You can find a promo code and a link in the show notes. If you have any tips you'd like to share with everyone, a comment on a show, or if you would like to suggest a topic for an upcoming episode, write into podcast@alexaddix.com. I'd love to hear from you. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.
Tom Gilmore lives on a farm. There's a storm on the way, so he's boarding up the windows of his house.
Haley Williams lives in an apartment. It's a beautiful day. She's making her usual monthly donation to the American Red Cross.
Tom doesn't know a tornado will leave his family with no place to go.
Haley doesn't know her gift will help give Tom's family shelter.
When you support the Red Cross, you change a life.
Starting with your own.
Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn about life-changing opportunities in your area.
Practical Offense is a member of the Gun Rights Radio Network at gunrightsradio.com. And that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions, commentary, and topic suggestions, send an email to podcast@alexaddix.com. That's podcast@alexaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexaddix.com.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.